stones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Good morning, Reading. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to my show, Positively Healthy, here on KCNR 1460. Oh, gosh, well, what an unbelievable show we have for you today. You know, this is the beginning of our series. You know, if you want to start something in the food business, some type of business that relates to food in Shasta County, this is your show. So if you have a family recipe, if you make a sauce, if you make a pie, salami, cheese, chutney, something, if you have a walnut tree in the back and you think that maybe you'd like to sell those in a store and you want to figure out how to package them, we're going to start a series of shows that answer a lot of these questions. And so, you know, stores would like to buy a lot of local things, but there aren't really that many things for them to buy. So we're going to try to figure out here how to jumpstart our local economy. And today we have Fern Hastings, the Senior Environmental Health Specialist with Shasta County. She'll be here today. And we have Julie Olmsted of Grandma's Barbecue and Catering out on Deschutes Road in Palisadro. And, you know, Julie has done a lot of things right, and her philosophy is take it slow, inch your way along, and have a lot of success, which is exactly what she's done. And so those will be our guests coming up here in a little while. Next week we have Dr. Craig Crawford. He'll be taking my show for me while I attend a conference, and he has his new Skin Intelligence program, and I'm not certain what all guests he's going to have, but he has a call-in show, and you can call in and ask him skin questions or skin-related things. And so in the studio right here right now, we have Michael Jatowski from East Earth Trade Winds, and welcome, Michael.
Good morning, Trudy.
Well, good morning. You know, you're going to come on monthly and teach us something. And so you're our famed acupuncturist here in Reading, and you have your fabulous herb store, and you do mail order. You have all sorts of cool things you do, and today you're going to teach us something. What's up?
Yeah, today I want to talk about medical marijuana.
Okay.
And, what got me started on this is that last Tuesday in the Record Searchlight, there was an article about this new office coming to town called Medicannabis Office, and it's really a totally interesting subject, you know, from the economical point of view and also from the medical point of view. So I just wanted to mention about marijuana, how it would be seen in terms of Chinese herbal medicine.
Oh, and, good.
I think it's really interesting.
Through the eyes of history.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the effects it has on the body, whether it's good, bad, or whatever.
Hmm.
But the first thing is the economics of it, because I think that's totally interesting, too. And I think what these doctors have found is the goose that laid the golden egg. Basically, they have opened up a clinic, and they see patients. The patients will come in maybe already with a diagnosis, and then they verify it and give a recommendation, not a prescription, but a recommendation to use medical marijuana. And when they do this, they charge about $150 a pop, they cash only. So most medical providers will bill insurances, and that may take anywhere from several weeks to several months for reimbursement. And so there's a high overhead cost in doing this. So they've cut that out, and just they're going strictly cash. Now, the other thing about that is that they see a tremendous amount of patients. And according to this article, this business, and there's many offices, there's Medican offices, there's a lot of them, and they were seeing 1,600 patients a week. When you translate that at $150 a visit, that's like a $12 million a year business, cash. So, like I was saying, the goose that laid the golden egg. So there's definitely some monetary interest in these doctors. They're not doing any procedures in the office that I know of. Not that I've been there, but basically they're just verifying a diagnosis.
So they can have basically, what, a table? There's really no need for an exam room? Yeah,
or maybe they have a blood pressure cuff or some minor equipment, but they probably don't stock any hypodermic needles or bandages or antibiotics or things like that, and they're not treating people for emergencies and stuff like that. So their overhead's way down. So to me, it's definitely a big money maker for these doctors.
Aren't they smart? Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Today,
Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to my show, Positively Healthy, here on KCNR 1460. And in the studio, we have Michael Jatowski, Reading acupuncturist and owner of East Earth Trade Winds, and you're teaching us some things about medical marijuana that maybe we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we talked a little bit about the money end of it, but the next part is the alternative medicine part. And in this article I was referring to, which was last Tuesday in the Record Searchlight, the doctor who started this particular business said he was interested in alternative medicine. But in my mind, alternative medicine has nothing to do with drugs. Marijuana is definitely a drug. Usually I think of alternative medicine like chiropractic, nutrition, acupuncture, non-mind-disturbing herbs, substances, and things like that, or massage, biofeedback, which are all good for chronic pain or a lot of different illnesses. And most people, for example, in my practice, want to get away from drugs. They don't want to be
altered. They want to be clear in thinking.
Exactly.
And,
and this is a whole different group of people that will go to this medical marijuana. So one thing that's interesting too is when a doctor writes his recommendation, and once again, it's not a prescription; it's a recommendation. He doesn't tell you how much to use. Okay, it's just like, okay, here, use medical marijuana. It's up to the patient to figure out the dosage. Now, can you imagine a patient who has back pain and goes to the doctor and they say, here's a prescription for Vicodin. You can buy it once a day and take whatever it needs to make you well. You know, it's like,
it wouldn't happen that way. Yeah,
that's totally insane.
Dosage
is like blood pressure medicine or whatever. Yeah, it's very important. You want to take 10 milligrams of this once a day or twice a day or for how long? You just don't do that.
And but you're with this closely monitored.
Yeah, yeah. And with the medical marijuana, no, it's just totally open. So apparently there's all different strengths of it and, you know, what have you. But to me, that doesn't make sense. So the part of what I'm interested in also is like Chinese medicine and Chinese herbal medicine. It's very thoroughly researched, you know, for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And dosages are very specific on using herbs. They might range from, for example, like 3 to 9 grams. Of a particular herb, or 1 to 3 grams, or maybe on some substances they might use it in like tenths of a gram, but it's very specific. And this is as opposed to medical marijuana, it's like whatever it takes, you know. So there's a problem there, you know, for that. The other thing is that in Chinese herbal medicine, they don't talk about marijuana being used. They do talk about marijuana seeds. Now the seeds are used in Chinese medicine as a intestinal lubricant for a laxative, but there still is a dosage on that. They say use 10 to 15 grams, and you'd use that in basically like 4 cups of water and boil it, usually with some other herbs as a tea, to treat the problem of constipation, okay? But they do have a toxicity on that, and there's a whole bunch of side effects if you use too much. So that's all noted in Chinese medicine.
I see.
But once again, with marijuana, they don't talk about that. So getting back to learning herbs as an acupuncturist, we have to learn over 400 different herbs that we're tested on and probably over 80 formulas that we're required to know before we can practice acupuncture. The cannabis seeds, that is actually part of our test. That's something that we have to know about. But they don't talk about the cannabis leaves or buds or that part in Chinese medicine. So,
but you were saying that marijuana grows in China. It's part of
history. Yeah,
of
it does
Chinese
grow there.
Medicine.
Yeah, but they just don't use it.
And they don't use it.
That has to be
profound.
Or if they do, they probably have extremely small amounts. And the problem with marijuana, as I see, is that you know, it is a mind-altering drug, and you can have side effects like increased heart rate or lower blood pressure. People can get, you know, bloodshot eyes, short-term memory loss, things like that. Now, they have found in some research that it does help with certain problems like intraocular pressure for glaucoma or helping reduce muscle spasticity or treating nausea or poor appetite in, like, chemotherapy patients. Now, and those are, you know, valid things to use it for, but at the same time, there are the side effects of it. So in Chinese medicine, when you have, for example, the euphoria, in Chinese medicine they would call that disturbing the spirit. There's herbs that, in Chinese medicine, a category of herbs called calming the spirit herbs, herbs that help reduce anxiety or maybe help you go to sleep if you're having insomnia, things like that. But this is just kind of like the opposite of that, you know. It's like making you forget things, you know, which is a problem. It's a health problem, you know, like Alzheimer's.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, you want to have a good memory. You don't want to, like, oh, geez, I can't remember what I just said kind of thing. So
people in the studio are giggling.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's lots of different side effects like that. Another one is, like, paranoia. which can set in with some users if they use too much, or I guess it depends maybe on their personality too. In Chinese medicine, the idea of body organs and how they work is a lot different than in what we know in modern medicine. And for example, they associate different emotions with different organs. And so with the kidneys, they associate the emotion of fear. And so paranoia is like an extreme fear. So in terms of Chinese medicine, there would be a detrimental effect on the kidneys. And as far as maybe the anxiety or memory loss, that would be a problem of the heart. In Chinese medicine, they say the spirit resides in the heart. And I think a lot of us can see that as far as, like, you feel love in your heart, you know, things like that.
Sure. Our
hearts are Valentine's Day, things like that.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, you know, a nice thing. So we can associate that. Another symptom is like bloodshot eyes. In Chinese medicine, they associate the eyes with the liver. So if you're getting bloodshot eyes, that means it's affecting your liver somehow, okay? And I'm sure there's other medical research that shows, you know, this in terms of modern medicine too. But it's a detrimental effect. It shouldn't make your eyes bloodshot. I don't know if any formula that I have recommended to people, or herbs that I've given to people, that makes them have bloodshot eyes.
Right.
It's not a good effect. I mean, there's
these are imbalances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that people are using this. And I think in the long run, what the doctors are doing, I mean, they're prescribing this, but it's not really to the benefit of the patients. I think there's possible long-term side effects or other imbalances that may manifest when they use this. So in my mind, using marijuana, there would be more research in it, and they would find a dose that doesn't produce these side effects. Oftentimes in Chinese medicine, we realize that there are different, let's say, harsh characteristics, or maybe there are some negative side effects with some herbs, but they'll balance them with another herb. So, for example, like with smoking marijuana too, sometimes you get a dry mouth, like cotton mouth or something like that. So in Chinese medicine, that would be considered like a deficiency of the vital fluids of your body. And if you're using like another herb that produce that side effect in Chinese medicine,
yeah,
you would have another herb in the formula to
balance that.
Yeah, or you reduce the amount of the herb that actually causes that effect.
Oh, fascinating. Gosh. Well, hey, you know, I love your opinion. I love the information you share with us. And this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're going to take a break. Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. In the studio, we have Michael Jatowski from East Earth Trade Winds, Redding's fabulous acupuncturist. Welcome back.
Oh, glad to be back here.
Good. Well, you're teaching us interesting, dynamic information about marijuana as a medicinal herb and just as maybe something we've started to lean on a little bit here. So
yeah, and I think there's good alternatives. The one thing I wanted to also bring up, too, is that a lot of people say that marijuana makes you mellow, and to a degree, except for the people that grow it, and they carry guns and stuff like that, so they're definitely not mellow. I think, and that might get back to the liver thing, too, that how it affects you. In Chinese medicine, the liver is associated with anger, and over time, maybe it disturbs your liver, and you get more anger, and then the paranoia, you're worried about people stealing your marijuana, and so you have
huge
guns.
Problem, yeah, growing it's a, problem. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big, you know, there's a big criminal element involved in that, which for me is another reason why you shouldn't use it, because you don't want to support those kind of things. But to kind of wrap this up, I think there's a lot better alternative means. Like we were talking about, most people who want alternative medicine don't want to be on drugs. They would rather take vitamins or herbs. They'd rather do biofeedback, hypnosis, chiropractic, nutrition, acupuncture. There's a lot of different therapies out there that can treat chronic pain or nausea. Pretty much anything that you would see or these people want to use the marijuana for, there's an alternative way that doesn't affect you in such a negative way.
It is interesting to see, like, if you go on the internet and you put in alternative medicine marijuana, I mean, you get all these clinics where suddenly it's just sort of supposed to be the new panacea for absolutely every problem. And it's like, I think of mostly my practice full of people who don't want to even be on aspirin. They want a clear thought. They want clear thoughts. They want all their energy. They want to have...
They want mental clarity.
They want clarity.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want their personal power.
Yeah.
They want a whole different
life
than just to be checked out.
Yeah, and they want to participate in life.
They do.
They don't
they
want
do.
To just lay back and, you know, sit on the couch or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, so anyways, I think, once again, I'd like to encourage people who are thinking about using medical marijuana or people who have used it to think about alternatives that for your health, because in the long run, I think that you're going to be better off. It's just like the people who use, for example, like Vicodin. They start off with one, and after a few years, they're up to three or four, and, you know, because their body builds up a resistance. And I would assume that same thing with marijuana. Maybe you try it, and then you need a stronger, you know, stronger high or something like that to have the same effect, because you're probably building up a tolerance. So there's always better ways to do things, and I think, like I said, the chiropractic acupuncture, all these different methods are some of the best ways to go.
They're drug-free, and, you know, that's sort of what these professions have been priding themselves on since the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, get in balance and stay in balance. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on today. Was there something else you wanted to add?
No, that's it. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, love having you, and you're going to be on next month with us again, right?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we're taking a break. We'll be right back.
What do you look for in a bill?
Listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And in the studio, we have Judy Olmsted from Grandma's Barbecue and Catering on Deschutes Road. Am I saying your name right?
Julie.
What did I say? Judy? Oh, no. I don't even know any Julies. Judies. Okay. So we have Fern Hastings, the Senior Environmental Health Specialist with Shasta County. Welcome, Fern.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here. Well, you know, we started this whole idea of trying to teach people information, how to wind through all of the red tape, to learn the red tape, see if it's even all that bright red, you know, to try to learn some rules and regulations before you start a small business in Shasta County. And part of our motivation in talking to the Vicky down at Orchard Nutrition, they're just things they need produced. They need more like gluten-free snacks. They need more kind of dessert things that are at the counter, where people that are more on the health food side of things, where people can grab them and at lunchtime. There are a lot of locally produced things that they would like to support, but they buy them out of the area. I know that I buy cheese from New Zealand, and I think it's nutty. You know, it's like, what? We have dairies that dump out milk every day. I want there to be salami that we make that doesn't have chemicals and preservatives in it. There's a whole lot that I think we can do in our county that, you know, we can start right here with the support of our local regulators like you. And then, you know, you started a your barbecue sauce that we're going to talk about. So you've taken through, there's a whole procedure. There's just a revolution that's happening, but then people have a little bit of cold feet and they're concerned. So the point of today's show is the beginning of our, what I call the regulator series. And so Fern, we have you on to really talk a little bit about, you know, what do people have to know if they're going to start a business. And so I want to start at the beginning. Like, what exactly do you do in your department with the county?
We inspect restaurants, markets, temporary food facilities, mobile food facilities, anything retail. But if you're talking about anything wholesale, then you have to go through the state Food and Drug Branch. Should I give their number?
Sure.
Their phone number is 916-650-6500, and they deal with all wholesale. The code that we deal with is the California Retail Food Code.
Okay. And so, say, for example, let's just kind of start with somebody thinking, I'm going to, you know, let's go through, maybe we should just go through your product. And so, at Grandma's Barbecue and Catering, you, tell us how you came through with your idea.
I've just made this barbecue sauce for, probably 30 years, and decided I needed to do something, so I wanted to bottle it. I started talking to other people that did, you know, like I went to the farmer's market and the girl who makes jam and different stuff, and I got Fern's name.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted Fern right from the beginning. That's the thing is, you know, find out what you need to do. And I just contacted her, and how do I start? What do I need to do? And just follow it step by step was the big thing.
So you had a 30-year-old family recipe for barbecue sauce, and you'd learned along the way that people liked it. You know, family kept wanting more, friends wanted more, and you somewhere thought, let's try to bottle it. That's where you started.
It is.
Okay. What did you do? You called Fern, and then you said, hey.
Just found out what I needed to do. I needed, you know, my labeling. You have to make, you can't just say, oh, I want to go to my computer and print a label that says what it is. You know, you have, your labels have to have the ingredients and listed as they are. And
the weight.
Process.
Okay.
The
so
weight,
you follow the rules right
follow,
there.
Right. That's the biggest thing. Is from the beginning, just do it step by step. And red tape's not.
She did. She did find an approved kitchen to work out of.
Okay.
Red Rock.
The Red Rock in Palisadro.
Okay. So you went to the Red Rock in Palisadro, and now that's such a good question. Okay, people, you can't make it at home. We know that. All right, so you have to make it in an approved kitchen. Now, who is approving the kitchen? Is that you, Fern?
Yes.
Okay.
And Esther's got a nice big kitchen.
Okay.
And I don't know that she uses it that much, but she was willing to rent it out.
Okay.
And then Julie actually got it approved by the state, too, so she could do wholesale as well.
Okay, so the first thing is if someone is thinking, all right, I make, I don't know, chutney. All right, so I have a great recipe. People love it. They come over. So there's going to be, they're going to have to figure out where to get bottles, right? They have to figure out how to put the label on and do the label right from the beginning, and they can't make it at home, so they have to basically get on the phone and call restaurants, right? Is that pretty much their job? What restaurant is near them that might have a little bit of space?
That has space, that has the equipment they need to make the product they need.
Okay.
That, you know, they have to go in and look at it and see if it's suitable for them. They might may not find it clean enough, or you know, may not see there's enough space.
Okay, so if you need a lot of counter space because mm-hmm. you have to spread things out, it needs counter space. If you're doing mostly work on the stovetop, then there has to be enough burners. If you're mostly needing an oven, then there has to probably more than one oven, or you're going to be there all day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So okay, so your first job is to go look around, and then what? They, let's say they find a kitchen that they like, then they give you a ring and say, can you come on over and check it out for me? Or
well, most likely it's already approved.
Okay.
So, like, the Red Rock was fine. It was already approved. I didn't have to take another look at it.
Okay. So if you already know the kitchen, are they? Do you have to sign them off? Or
yeah,
you
once they are ready to go, I'll come out, do an inspection, and sign off their permit. But in the case of a bottled product, like the sauce or the chutney, you also go through the state lab to make sure it's not going to be a botulism hazard.
Okay. Now, so how hard was that?
It was very easy. I just had to, some paperwork, I fill out a list of all my ingredients
mm-hmm.
and the exact amount. And
what do you mean by exact amount?
Well,
per that's in each little bottle?
In each batch.
Oh, in each batch, okay.
And how much listed in order with my first ingredient on all the way through.
Okay, that makes sense.
Send it in, and
yeah.
They test it, comes back, and the paper that comes back tells you that it's, you know, clear for botulism, what your shelf life should be, should it be refrigerated, should it not be refrigerated.
Well, that's really helpful. That's nice, yeah.
You know, it just takes time, but it's easier to do it right the first time than to have to keep going back and doing something.
Mm-hmm.
That was my biggest thing. I kept wanting to hurry things along, but I didn't want it to have to go back and redo it. So that's the biggest thing I would say, is just do it a step at a time and not get in a hurry, because then you have to go back and start over.
So now you've made your product. Mm-hmm. You've been okayed on all these steps. You've got a label, you've got a bottle, you have a shelf life, you have refrigerate after opening, kind of all the things you need on there. Okay, and then you decided at that point to sell it at the farmer's market, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, Fern, that's under your jurisdiction again,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes. So she just got she was selling prepackaged to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So she just got a mobile permit, which means she can go to any food, any farmer's market and sell, because nothing was opened. Then after a time, she wanted to actually do sandwiches. So that is a different type of permit. It's a temporary permit.
Okay.
And so she did that And then eventually she did well enough that she wanted to open a business.
I love that.
A restaurant. She already had a business.
Yeah. So then, now, if she were to have samples of the barbecue sauce at the farmer's market, does that change something?
You had them in little containers.
I had to do them in my approved kitchen. I put them in little plastic cups and snapped the lids on in there so it wasn't opened at the market. And then I would just give them a little prepackaged cup, and they could taste it that way.
Okay.
But that was just because she wanted to have a mobile permit, which was cheaper. Once she had a temporary permit where she was making the sandwiches, then she could just serve them samples. She didn't have to have the prepackaged ones.
I see. Okay, so then once you were actually, at that point, you decided to do the pulled pork sandwich, right? So
right.
Now you're at the farmer's market with your barbecue sauce. They can grab a bottle and buy it, and then they can also buy a sandwich.
Right.
Okay, so then they can just grab a sample of whatever.
Of the sauce.
Or anything. Okay. Wow, and so that was a smashing success for you. People loved that.
Yes.
Okay, and so then, at this point, like, what are the mistakes, Fern, that people make? Like, where do they get in a traffic jam?
Just by not calling and asking questions. When they're at the farmer's market, they're told by the people that they won't let them in until they have a permit, so that's not really a problem at the farmer's market. But just setting up anywhere without getting permits first, you know, a lot of times, like if it's a nonprofit, there's no actual fee. They fill out the permit. It says what they're going to do, and I will call them up and ask questions about safety. How are you going to keep the cold food cold? How are you going to keep the hot food hot? How are you going to wash your dishes and sanitize? That sort of thing. So just not inquiring first.
Okay, and you had to solve that, right? If you were going to serve those sandwiches, you had to figure out how to keep the cold things cold and the hot things hot?
Yeah.
How hard was that?
It wasn't. I just used the roaster ovens where I could regulate the heat and thermometer to keep them.
Okay.
And I had two, one for the hot food, and then one if you want to, because you can't, if you're getting low on my meat, I couldn't add my cold pulled pork into the hot. So I had a separate one for when I would get low. I would put the cold into a separate one, get it hot, and just rotate it.
Okay, so
and
the like
cold
a little
was
technique
just in an ice
you needed
chest
to learn.
With ice on it, so that you're not putting your cold meat in with your hot meat. You want to make sure that
that makes sense. And you know, Fern, you were telling me yesterday on the phone, which I thought was so interesting. You know, like we are all trained to cook for our families, and so if you're going to take something room temperature and put it in the refrigerator, we kind of have figured out how long it's going to take to get cold. And then tell us what you were telling me about if you have a big old vat of something.
Yeah, if you have a 5-gallon container of something that you're trying to cool down and you stick it in your refrigerator, it's going to take a lot longer than if you have leftovers from a dinner for four. That's going to cool a lot more quickly. And then I've actually seen where someone will put so much hot food in a refrigerator, and it's too small a refrigerator, so it just warms up the refrigerator rather than cooling down the food. And the longer food is between 41 and 135, the more likely it's going to grow bacteria. So, you know, if it's already tainted, which it can be pretty easily.
Yeah.
So you always want to keep it below 41 or above 135.
You were also saying that your job is to really take care of the sickest person in the room. You know, that...
Right. Because restaurants and temporary food facilities don't know who they're cooking for. They could be cooking for someone who's very young or very old, their immune system isn't very good yet, someone who's on chemotherapy. So since they don't know who they're cooking for, they need to make sure everything's as safe as possible. The law requires at schools that they have to use pasteurized eggs. If they're using, like if they're serving scrambled eggs, they can't actually use shell eggs. They have to use pasteurized eggs, and that's just extra precaution.
Okay, and so the point there is just because if someone's fragile and if food hasn't been handled properly, it can, you know, even if you're going to get diarrhea, I mean, that's, you know, if you're a sick person, that can be life-ending.
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Come on, pig.
Oh, gosh. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460, and we have Senior Environmental Health Specialist Fern Hastings here, and Julie Olmsted of Grandma's Barbecue and Catering, and boy, do these gals have some wisdom and some street smarts, and they know how to wind their way through all the ways for you to start a business in Shasta County. And Fern, I want to come back to, you know, during the break we were talking about, hey, let's just say you want to make cookies. You know, you want to make cookies, you want to sell them at three markets or in Reading, and you want to start there and maybe move to Chico and sell them there, move to Sacramento, stay in the state, you know, but you want to start it here. Tell us how do you pull that off?
So actually, what you were talking about is wholesale.
If they're
selling them at the farmer's market, that's retail because they're selling it themselves. If they're going to be making it somewhere and selling it to other retail food facilities, then that's wholesale.
Okay.
So they'd have to get a wholesale license for that.
Okay, and what does that entail?
Permit
that's not
for
your
that.
Area?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the state.
And do we know if that's a state license?
Well, Julie went through that, so we know Hester's Kitchen was approved for that.
Okay.
So let's say somebody wanted to make cookies in that kitchen. If they were selling at the farmer's market,
mm-hmm.
or even selling from that kitchen, then they'd get a retail permit from me. And normally when somebody is making a product out of an already approved kitchen, we permit them as the cheapest food facility, which is about $114 a year.
Okay.
And they would meet the state labeling requirements. If they're not making any health claims, they don't have to do nutritional content. I have a handout. If anybody calls in to our office, we can send them the labeling handout from the state.
So if you say high fiber or, like, you know.
Right.
If
you're going to state that they're high fiber cookies, then they have to do all the nutrition information.
Okay.
But otherwise, if they're not making health claims, they don't have to do that if they're a small business.
Ah, so there are ways you can kind of make this simple if you want to just steer around some things.
You could possibly do it on your own computer. It wouldn't look as nice as a label you have sent out.
Yeah. Okay. So here we are. Let's just walk through two things here. Let's say you want to, if you're not sure if people like your cookies, the place to start would probably be at the farmer's market, right? And then you get immediate feedback if people are buying them on a regular basis before you have gone wholesale and you're trying to sell them everywhere. Is that the place? You know, everybody thinks that everyone loves what they make, and then they're sort of the, so if you were going to start at the, would you suggest that if you're trying to set people up for success?
I guess I don't really suggest, you know, people do what they want to do.
Okay.
So I tell them what they need to do when they tell me what they want to do.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's where people start. You know, it's definitely going to be cheaper to work out of somebody else's kitchen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you do well, like Julie, you build your own place. That way, if you decide you don't like doing the business, you haven't invested a lot of money to begin with.
Right. Now, you have cookies out at your place, right? Do you guys make those? Or?
I don't. I get mine from the Millville Bakery.
Okay. Now, they're another success story, right?
They started the same way, exactly.
Okay, tell me how they started.
They started making out of another approved kitchen.
Yeah.
And they were doing samples at the farmer's market and selling at the farmer's market. And they actually did little prepackaged samples. They don't anymore because I guess everybody knows how their biscotti tastes, so people just buy it.
Yeah.
and then eventually they bought their own place, and now they have a wholesale license, so we don't actually inspect them anywhere except at their booth at the farmer's market.
Uh-huh.
But the state goes out there and inspects them.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy. Well, if you're just tuning in, you know,
back.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you know, we're reclaiming Shasta County as the food capital. Maybe we're claiming it for the first time here. So we are going into production. If you make a sauce or chutney, or if you have a family recipe, if you have a future in salami or cheese, or you have a great pie recipe, or if you have a walnut tree out back that you think we'd like to be eating your walnuts, hey, I'm hoping that you can be inspired to figure out a little bit of the red tape, wind your way through it, and if you have problems, I want you to call us, and we will figure out how to help you through the maze of I want to say a regulation, but it's just not sounding that hard to me. So in the studio, we have Fern Hastings, Senior Environmental Health Specialist, and Julie Olmstead of Grandma's Barbecue and Catering, who are offering fabulous advice. And Julie started small, took steps that seemed very methodical, and has a successful business out on Deschutes Road where she has fabulous barbecue. And then Fern has great advice. Some things we're learning today are within your jurisdiction, and some things are beyond it. You know, we keep talking about cheese because I'm on a little bit of a goal to get us famous for our cheese here in Shasta County. I don't know why we can't have, you know, Shasta Cavern Blue. And cheese makers are coming forward right now and trying to really get on board. And you were telling me that cheese is, that's a state-regulated product, right?
Yes, yes. So we had somebody last year, or she's probably there still, at the farmer's market selling cheese. And they are approved first by the state. It's California Department of Food and Agriculture, Milk and Dairy Food Safety Branch. It's a mouthful. Their number is 209-466-7186. Then once they're at the farmer's market, all I look at is their permit from the state and that they're keeping their cheese at the right temperature if it's a perishable cheese. If their cheese is in the store, then it's already got a wholesale license, and so we wouldn't look at that. We look at the temperature the store's keeping it, but not at the production.
Okay. And then, Julie, what are your other products that you're selling beyond your barbecue sauce? You have do you have other things?
Out at the restaurant?
Yeah.
We do. A lunch menu, we have the barbecue, we pulled pork, brisket, tri-tip, burgers, and then we have a large smokehouse, we do smoked ribs, chicken, we have homemade baked beans that were my great-grandma's recipe, homemade cornbread muffins, we have a full barbecue menu, and then we do also serve Pete's Coffee, where we have the full cappuccino line plus 100% fruit smoothies and blended drinks. But our main thing is we're just a full barbecue restaurant.
Now, just kind of an aside, now how has that gone for you starting a restaurant during, well, a recession?
It's been good. You know, the winter months were a little slow, but we knew they would be. And I'm lucky I'm in the position that it's myself and my daughter and my son and his wife. So I have all family working for me. I don't have to worry about other employees. But we're doing good.
Oh, good.
We're doing good.
Well, I know that when Mark reviewed your restaurant, we got to eat some fabulous food, and that the family bean recipe was delicious. So keep up the good work there. You know, Fern, I want to go back to if you have a walnut tree. I mean, what's your responsibility there if someone wants to show up at the farmer's market with nuts?
Anybody at the farmer's market would have to have an ag certificate.
Okay.
Other than that, they're under the blanket permit of the farmer's market for just the plain walnuts.
So that person, if they're listening, needs to start with an ag permit.
From the Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
And they don't need a separate permit from us because they're already under the permit of the farmer's market.
Okay. So does that mean someone's going to come out and look at their tree? Probably, or
I don't know what the Department of Agriculture does.
Okay, but they're that group. So if you're listening to that, then that would be we don't have their number, right?
No, sorry.
Okay, but U.S. Department of
just the local Department of Agriculture.
Local. Okay, that's going to be local.
They're
all
on
right.
Bocelli Lane.
So that helps that person. Yeah. Then they can call and learn that. But then they're under the umbrella. They don't have to do much.
They
for
don't
the
get
farmer's
a separate
market.
Permit from us, but they have to go through whatever the farmer's market requires.
Okay. All right. That's very helpful.
And then the law does exempt people selling produce and nuts and stuff grown on their property from their property. So if you have a farm, you can set up a stand on your farm with no permits from us.
Okay. And so no permits from anybody because it's on your property?
I can only say from us because I don't know what other people, other departments require.
Okay. Well, cool. Hey, we're learning all sorts of tricks of the trade here. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll be right back. I'm back. Hi, you're listening to Positively Healthy with Dr. Trudy Pratt. In our last couple of minutes here, I've got a couple of questions here for Fern. I wanted to just ask you, you know, how many people are part of your county, and how many places are you trying to regulate and inspect?
I can't give you an exact number, but I know it's somewhere around 900 food facilities.
Wow.
We also inspect pools, underground storage tanks, hazmat, landfills, land use, you know, septics and wells. But there's, for the food program, I do pretty much all foods. We have a new person who's training who will do mostly foods, and then we have somebody else who does foods maybe half-time.
Boy, oh boy, so you're not in the office much?
No.
And then how long does an inspection take?
It really depends. And, you know, a place like Blockbuster takes almost no time, but if you go into a big store like Raley's or Safeway, they're the equivalent of like four little restaurants because you've got a bakery, a deli, a meat department, plus the whole rest of the store. So that could take 2 or more hours.
Wow. And how long have you been doing this?
Over 17 years.
Oh, my. Well, that's a lot of years under your belt. You've seen a lot of cool things. You know, as we wrap up the show, I want to just see what advice you both have for people who might be hearing our show today and might be inspired to get out there and try something new. Julie, what do you want to offer people?
Mine would just be, don't get discouraged, but just do it slowly. You know, don't think, oh, I want to do this next weekend. It's going to take time. Just do it slow and take it a step at a time, and it's definitely worth it, and it's not as complicated as it sounds.
You know, I think that's unbelievable advice, because just my personality would be the opposite, you know, just like try to get it all done on Thursday, you know, that kind of thing. That's just, yeah. So I think that's brilliant, good. And then, Fern, what would you offer people?
Just to call with questions. You know, I can give them all the information they need so they can do what they want to do.
And the mistakes that you see are that people really just needed to give you a quick ring and talk to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that seems like that's pretty easy. And what's your phone number for people?
530-225-5787.
And is there a best time to call you? Are you
first thing in the morning or between 4:30 and 5 is when I'm normally not out inspecting?
Excellent. Oh, I hope you've learned something today. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and Dr. Craffert will be here next week, and I'll be back the following week. Have a great morning.